Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mike Chen, you know what to do.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Welcome in. This hour of The Score is being brought to you by Sunrise Chevrolet in Glendale Heights, the bright way to buy. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and it's a full boat show tonight. It's great because over the next two nights is going to be 7 hours of this radio show, and that has me very, very excited because it gives us a chance to stretch out a little bit, talk about some things more in depth as we can, and I'm glad that you're along for the ride. It's a beautiful night in Chicago. Apparently a beautiful night in Milwaukee, too. Sun's out. It's nice. It's not too hot. Like, it's not so oppressively hot that normal people are sweating. Herb Lawrence, on the other hand, man, struggling. Struggling today in an air-conditioned building, but it's fine. Herb Lawrence is the executive producer of this program. Mike Chen is in charge of the sound. We are glad that you are part of the show. Here's what we have for you tonight. At 6:30, Jeff Levering, who does play-by-play for the Brewers, is going to join me. I'm excited to talk with Jeff. I know him a little bit from doing basketball. You know, I would call basketball games for DePaul. He would be doing the national call with our buddy Stephen Bardo. Jeff's a good dude, so I'm excited to hear his thoughts on this rivalry and the National League Central, so we'll do that at 6:30. At 7 o'clock, Casey Johnson is going to be on the show. I was trying like crazy to get Casey in studio because there's so much stuff that I want to talk with Casey about. He was nice enough to be on the phone, and that'll have to do. But I will tell you, if you have not read the Trib piece on the Bulls that he and Malika Andrews did, please seek it out. Take some time. I mean, it's not necessarily like a 1 minute read. You know how sometimes on stuff on the internet they tell you. Well, this is 1 minute. No, this is, you got to dig in a little bit. If you're an old school Bulls fan, it's going to hit you in your heart. Like, it's going to hit you where you live. And even if you're not necessarily a Bulls fan or a basketball fan, I think that you will find it interesting. How organizations view themselves, how it works, what the last 20 years of Bulls basketball is like. I really enjoyed it, so I want to invite Casey on. And we're going to talk with him at 7 o'clock. 8 o'clock, Joe Ostrowski, our weekly conversation with Joe. A lot of baseball on the show tonight, which is good. I also get an update because Joe's kind of our betting reporter. So we'll get an update on which states are going to make things legal and what's going on in the state of Illinois. We'll do that with Joe as well as talking about Hit and Run, which is a sensational show. I love that show right now and what he and Barry are doing. Robert Klimko from Sports Illustrated is going to join me at 8:20. Robert did a piece talking about Christian Hackenberg. And if you hadn't heard, Christian, I don't even know if you care, but Christian Hackenberg got cut from the Raiders. And remember, this was one of those kids like, oh, you just wait till he gets to the pros. Just wait until that guy gets to the pros. And he is one of these programmed quarterbacks. And I want to talk with Robert about that. And I want to, you know, talk with you as well, because you might have a parent, or you might be a parent of one of these kids that's going to all these camps. And does it really benefit the child and the talent to do some of this stuff? We'll discuss that with Robert at 8:20. The phone number, 312-644-6767, If you would like to text the show, 67011 is the way that you can do that. I would like to talk with you if you're driving back from Milwaukee and you were at the game. Hey, we were dogging the Brewers a couple nights ago, and their pitching showed up over the last two nights. They worked those wins, and they got those wins. So good for them as they're back now in first place by, what, a game and a half over the Cubs. It's one of the things that the Cubs are – one of their flaws as a team is them being inconsistent offensively. If you look at the numbers say they have the best offense in the National League or one of the top two offenses in the National League with runs per game. The problem is that with them, it's been, oh, we're going to win this game 6-0 or 6-2, and then we're going to have a couple of games where we score a combined three runs. It's been like that. Their run differential is great so far this year. Right there at the top of the league. But the problem is that they can't seem to get enough people going at the same time. And that's a struggle for them. Can I just say, I'm hoping that this is not a harbinger, but as much as I was talking about Jason Hayward going to left center during that streak where he's been super hot, I saw Yankee Jason Hayward today. I saw trying to hit the ball over the wall in right field Jason Hayward today. So I'd love to talk with you if about the series, about the game itself. 312-644-6767 is the number. I was first guessing this. You were probably doing the same thing in the ninth inning where you're going, Jimenez? When you have Chris Bryant on the bench. Chris Bryant is in a is on the struggle bus right now offensively. And the struggle bus for him is like a barely 800 OPS. But he is struggling. I felt like that was a move you make with the off day tomorrow. I felt like, yes, you told him that he could have the day off. But in a situation where you're still trying to win the game, I would have liked to have seen Bryant pinch hit in that situation. We saw all the crazy maneuvering that Joe did when with C-Sheck and Dunsing. But I want to see him in a situation that calls for your best player to come off the bench and put you in a position to win. I thought Bryant should have pinch hit. Like, I had no real problems. Like, and look, here's the thing. I threw this out on Twitter. And a guy was like, wait, let me read his text verbatim so that his tweet verbatim so that I don't get this wrong. But I threw out the idea of pinch hitting Bryant in that situation. And this guy hit me up and he said, no need to overanalyze this series too much. Lots of baseball left. That's not any time that we talk about a particular move or a particular game. It's one of the things that frustrates me as someone who loves sports. That for some reason, everyone jumps to the conclusion of we need to globalize it. If you and I were sitting at the game today, if we were sitting in Miller Park watching the ninth inning, we would have said, why isn't Madden pinch hitting Bryant here? Legitimately, we would have looked at this and said, why isn't this happening? And that doesn't mean that we don't like Joe Madden as a manager or that the Cubs aren't going to win the National League Central. It just means that's kind of a questionable move. The logical move would be to pinch hit Chris Bryant. And I hope that we get to a place where in a particular game, we can actually discuss the moves that happen in a game, the strategy that goes and is involved in a game. If you would like an answer to the question, at least an answer from Joe, Here's what Joe said on why he didn't use Madden.
I was trying to. I was going to use them the next time through if it got to. There was this spot may have come back around. He'd have been the last guy on the bench that I would have used them. I just thought under the circumstances.
Under the circumstances? The circumstances are there's the game. The game's at home plate. And that's and it's not like you were leaving yourself without a catcher. The move was pretty simple. You pinch hit Bryant for Jimenez. Contreras, who's already in left field, goes behind the plate. Bryant goes to left field if you tie the game up or go ahead. But I enjoy talking baseball strategy. I love the game. We spend a lot of it's so funny, and I know that they're 10, you know, it's only 10% of the amount of games. We will spend days, sometimes weeks, talking about a decision that happened in a football game. And it's only like that decision. But sometimes it feels like whenever you make a discussion about a managerial move in baseball, that you're making it bigger than it actually is. When it's really just us talking about the game. That's what we do. And that's what we would do if we were sitting together in your basement. That's what we would do if we were sitting at Miller Park. We would discuss what happened and why did that happen. So if you would like to discuss it, feel free. 312-644-6767 is the number. We all know what the big picture stuff is. The Cubs are right where they need to be. Everything's fine. Second best record in the National League. In sight of the Brewers. Starting pitching, Mike Montgomery. Baby. Mike Montgomery, man. Ooh, can I? At some point, can we talk about the back end of that Brewers bullpen, though? Because, my goodness. That's a problem. Glenn Ellen and Sean. Hey, Sean, you're on the score.
Hey, two things about the Cubs. First of all, I appreciate your point. You kind of started off the way I was going to go. The managing decisions, yeah, that was the right thing to do, the position that you pointed out. But I'm talking more specifically about the players as opposed to the manager, and I think that's the issue with hitting for contact as opposed to swinging out of your shoes. It's just, you know, I don't care who the manager is. I don't care who the hitting coach is. These are professional players, and they should be paying attention and hitting the ball. That's really the bottom line. You know, all the X's and O's, I don't care about that, and blaming the manager or the hitting coach, I don't think that's fair. These guys have been playing baseball their whole lives. C-ball, hit ball, that's the deal. When you start putting the ball in play, good things happen. And as far as the pitching goes, real quickly, Monty should be in the rotation, and maybe you go with some other people that you don't know. I don't know, but those other two guys, they got to sit. That's all I got, man. Thanks for letting me on. See ya.
I appreciate the phone call. This segment being brought to you by Indeed.com. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, and zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. Look, a lot of these players are what they are at this point in their career. That is not to say that one cannot try to improve themselves. And I wonder if we're going to see hitters over the next few years change their approach like we've seen them change their approach when it comes to the concept of launch angle. And we played this yesterday. It was really good stuff where Madden was on the midday show and he was talking about this with Dan and Connor about how things have changed and the counterpunch to everything that you've seen with launch angle and exit velocity and what the approach should be by some of the guys and the guys that he likes in his lineup.
First guy needing to get on base, and that really, because Jason will hit that hole between first and second. And again, it doesn't matter righty or lefty, he can find that hole. He should be getting more fastballs, although we're not a really big blazing base-stealing team. I don't even know if they're going to intimidate the other side by getting our leadoff hitter on. I like the hole being open for Jason. I like him in the two-hole right now because, actually, I like, if you look at today's lineup, the first six guys are contact, more contact guys. The strikeout does irk me a bit. I'm not part of this philosophy that the ultimate outcome of the home run, the strikeout, or the walk. I think the strikeout needs to be put in different buckets. It's not just another out. I think that's going to fade rather quickly, especially with the industry talking about more action in the game, speeding up the game, making it more interesting. The strikeout's very uninteresting. So I think eventually you're going to see something to be done with that, and it's going to be organic, but it's going to happen. So Jason's one of those guys. He moves the baseball. Almora moves the baseball. KB moves the ball. Rizzo moves the ball. Zobrist and then Contreras. Those are the first six today. So those six guys move the baseball, and that's a big part of – I love that. I really love the idea that contact is being made and it's not just another punch-out.
So Joe agrees with you that he would like to see more guys hit for contact. There's another – and I'll get back to your phone calls in a minute, but there was – I just want to stick with this because it's been a theme of the show over the last few weeks, and there's been some good sound from people around baseball. Nick Hostetler, who is the scouting director for the White Sox, was on Hit and Run on Sunday morning, and he was talking about Nick Madrigal, who the White Sox drafted, and him being a contact guy. But listen to Nick talk about that pendulum swing that he sees going the other way when it comes to launch angle and exit velocity versus guys who are trying just to put the ball in play.
I think it absolutely has to. And Barry, I think the big thing with that is, you never want to be behind the curve. You never want to be caught on the curve. You want to be ahead of it. And the bottom line is with that is we've got to make sure that we are looking, 3-4 years down the road. Look, the sexy thing right now is launch angle and exit velocity and all of those things. Well, the pitchers are starting to learn how to negate that by throwing higher strikes. They're pitching up in the zone more to try to eliminate guys that are trying to create their own launch angle and not let it happen naturally. So it's one of the things that, in doing that with a pitcher that now is going to pitch up in the zone, you got to make sure you got a guy that can put the bat on the ball and drive ball through the hole. And, the home runs are going to come. If anybody could sit here and say that when Brian Dozier or Jose Altuve was in the minor leagues that anybody could predict, 25, 30, 40 home runs out of those guys, they're lying. So those things are going to come naturally in the progression of a kid growing up and getting stronger and coming to big league parks where the ball travels better and it flies. I mean, heck, just go to a guaranteed rate in the summer and you'll see enough home runs to satisfy you. So, that did play into the Madrigal selection. It's a true baseball player, and those types of guys are going to be needed for 3-4 years down the road when other teams are trying to catch up. We want to have a stockpile of those type of guys.
So if you're a baseball fan who's frustrated that balls aren't being put in play, that too many guys are striking out, there are people in baseball that are paying attention to that and trying to counterbalance it. If you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions that you want to answer to WBBMNewsRadio.com/legal advice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz and Associates. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com/legal advice. At 6:30, we'll talk with Jeff Levering, who does play-by-play for the Brewers. Out to New Lenox and Jake. Hey, Jake, you're on the score.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I don't watch a lot of games on TV because, a lot of them I listen to on the radio. And from what I hear and what I, see and know, it seems like when the Cubs pitchers, excluding Lester, when they have a good outing, it seems like they can't put that many runs up on the board or put the, barrel to the ball. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not, I don't know. But it seems like, if Montgomery has that good of an outing today, there's no reason why they can't score any runs, especially, having it be back-to-back games where they don't score any runs. And I know, like you said, the Brewers bullpen is, one of the best in baseball, and it's doing really well right now. But you can't afford to put up no runs, back-to-back games when Montgomery, who's not even a starting pitcher, pitches that good.
Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. It's not just the Brewers bullpen. Their starting pitching has been pretty good, too. Chacin, over his last 12 starts, has been real good. And he went out there and was good today. So some of this is the Cubs' struggle. Some of it is the opponent, and it's hard to figure out which one is more prevalent in our discussion. But My goodness. Jeffress, Hader, and Thames, and Knable. Those guys at the back of a bullpen are disgusting. Hader is filthy. Just filthy. It's hard to pick up where the ball is. He's got that funky delivery, and he's got the stuff to go with it. Ugh. We'll take a closer look at that a little bit later on in the show. Itasca and Rick. Hey, Rick, you're on the score.
Hi, enjoy your show very much.
Thanks.
I'm 78 years old, and years ago, my Uncle Scott, God rest him, he's been dead for like 30 years. In his day, and he'd be laughing if he was alive today, these pitchers are making millions of dollars, and not only the Cubs, guys pitching a one-hitter going in the sixth inning, they yank the pitcher, they put in a relief pitcher, blows the game. That's happened twice to Kyle Hendricks already. Years ago, my Uncle Scott told me that some of these players in the 20s used to pitch a doubleheader. And if you don't believe me, you could look that up on some news article.
Rick, I'm aware. I mean, we just live in a different day now. That's not the way the pitchers are brought up. They're not stretched out that way. I think that there's an argument to be made that they should be going longer in games. But statistically, when you start to look at what the numbers are, the third time a lineup sees a pitcher, I understand that you want to give different looks. There have been times when I felt Joe has pulled specifically Hendricks too early in games. I feel like I'm seeing it happen mostly with Hendricks. But Montgomery is still a guy that you're still trying to stretch out a little bit. And he was only at 79 pitches. The Cubs bullpen is good. And they were good today. They didn't give up any runs. When we globalize some of this stuff, if you want to have the discussion about pitchers needing to go longer in games, I'm here for it because I kind of agree. But it's not something that you can just jumpstart. It's not something that happens at the major league level. That's something that happens as you're scouting guys and as you're bringing them up through rookie ball, A ball, all the way to the major leagues. Not everyone's arm is built to do it. It is so unnatural. Which is why I kind of like the Cubs' idea of buying pitching instead of growing it. It makes a lot of sense to me. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Jeff Levering, who does play-by-play for the Brewers. What's it like to call a game when it's a home game, but it kind of feels like a road game? We'll talk with Jeff about that next here on The Score. Thank you, thank you, thank you for hanging out tonight. Appreciate it. Glad that we're your choice for your drive home. My name is Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 10 o'clock. At 7, we are going to talk with Casey Johnson of the Tribune. Great piece in the Trib by him and Malika Andrews on the history of the Bulls after the 1998 championship. This segment being brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma. Get knowing. Going to talk with Jeff Levering of the Milwaukee Brewers. He does the play-by-play for the Milwaukee Brewers. I've known Jeff for a few years as we've crossed paths a little bit doing basketball as well as covering baseball. And I see the phone ringing right now, so let's just punch him up. What's up, Jeff?
Lawrence, how are you, pal?
I'm doing really well, man. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, anytime. Happy to do it.
All right, so let's start here. How big of a deal, and I know it's June, but how big of a deal was this for the Brewers to win this series?
I mean, I think it's really important, considering the fact they'd lost 7 straight games after the extra inning loss on Monday. I thought it was really important not only to get yesterday's ball game, but to get today's too. The pitching has been really good, especially the starting pitching against the Cubs all season long. ERA and the low twos over the last 10 games against Chicago. So it hasn't been the starting pitching. Just haven't had a lot of offense. And today just took one nicely clipped baseball by Lorenzo Cain. And that was it.
What's it like for you to work those, what are home games, but feel like road games?
It's different. It's felt a little less drastic of a switch the last couple of days. I think on Monday it was more of a maybe 65-35 split Cubs to Brewers fans, and then the last 2 days it's been pretty close to being 50-50, but again, the Cubs fans didn't really have a lot to be real excited about over the last 2 days, so the Brewers fans had a chance to get more boisterous, but it is really different. It's nothing that I've ever experienced in my career anywhere I've been, so it takes a little bit of getting used to.
Is it fun, though? Because, I mean, you at least have some heat in the ballpark with the fans going back and forth between cheering and being upset, depending on what's going on.
For sure. There's a little extra juice in the ballpark, and I think the best example of it was a couple of days ago when Wilson Contreras thought he hit the home run. This was on Monday, and Ryan Braun goes up and takes the home run away, and you could tell just in the crowd, of course, there's the excitement. You think the home run's going to go out from all the Cubs fans, and then there's the ebb and flow when nobody knew what the outcome was. Braun was kind of playing possum with the baseball behind his back. And then when he makes the catch, all the Brewers fans get up with their elation, their excitement. So that was the perfect play to describe what's going on in the ballpark, where it goes in waves. And, I mean, every pop-up you think is going to go out of the ballpark at Wrigley or with Cubs fans. So even on a ball that might even get out of the ballpark, it's really fun to be in this ballpark and in this series in moments like that.
Lorenzo Cain is one of my favorite players in the league. I just love the way he goes about playing the game. Had an incredible, like, fill the box score type game today. What's been the impact of getting him back in a Brewers uniform?
I think it's so important, just on a leadership aspect. You know, sometimes with young teams, and I think the Cubs found out about this a couple of years ago when they started making their run. Sometimes you just need to have an adult in the room, and that was Ben Zobrist on that 2016 team. You can have as much young talent as you want, but until you get that one guy who's lived it, who's breathed it, who's been a part of it, it's kind of tough to experience. And Lorenzo is kind of the adult in the room now for the Brewers, and his work ethic is unlike anybody else. Every first step he takes in the outfield, you can tell whether or not he's going to make the catch. He's just been really impressive on and off the field since he's returned to Milwaukee.
I had the chance to talk with Craig Counsell last week when they were in Chicago taking on the White Sox. I really enjoy talking baseball with them, and clearly a smart guy. How is he viewed up in Milwaukee, and what are his strengths as a manager?
I mean, he's smarter than the next guy in the room. And, I mean, he's a former econ major at Notre Dame, so, I mean, you don't get into Notre Dame unless you've got a little bit of street smarts with you and book smarts to go along with it. Craig is a very smart guy, and, you know, I'm fortunate enough to do the manager show with him when Bob Uecker isn't working. So, I mean, I get 5 minutes on the air with him, let alone the conversations that we get to have before and after our taped interviews. So I'm really lucky that I get a chance to learn from him and talk with him. He just sees things at a different level. Situation-wise, he'll look at it from three or four different angles, and you go, man, I never even would have thought about trying that or doing that. It's, the Cubs fans are a little spoiled with Joe Maddon because he's very smart. I mean, he's putting pitchers in the outfield like he did today, flip-flopping for batter situations. So I don't know if Craig Counsell is going to try and reinvent the wheel like that, but I wouldn't put it past him to try something.
What do you think the Brewers need if they're going to be not just contenders to win the division, but maybe World Series contenders? What else do they need?
Well, I think that starting pitching is – everybody could use more starting pitching, I think, in this league. And the Brewers have been kind of a patchwork starting rotation. I think that is going to be extremely helpful down the stretch. They could get Jimmy Nelson back. They're going to get Zach Davies back. So those are two guys that are already within that you don't have to necessarily go and trade for. And guys that have done it at the big league level. You're always trying to find some offensive help. I think the Brewers made a nice deal the other day, getting Brad Miller in to help out potentially at shortstop. Orlando Arce's going to have to start hitting at some point. His defense is outstanding, but you got to get some sort of offensive help at shortstop. And while Eric Kratz has been a nice revelation behind home plate, you know, you've got Manny Pena's hitting 200. He's great defensively, but you'd like to get a little bit more offense behind home plate. Those are really the two areas of concern, shortstop and behind the plate and the position player grouping. But you're always looking to add depth. add a little bit of offense, and if he can go find a starting pitcher for relatively cheap, I think the Brewers would be beneficial to do that.
Talking a little baseball with Jeff Levering, you can check him out. He's doing play-by-play for the Brewers on the radio side. I see him quite often when it comes to Big East basketball, where he's calling games for Fox Sports, which is great. He's always nice when he comes into town, even though he has to make like a three-hour drive in traffic in the winter to come do the games. But we appreciate the fact that he does it. That back of the bullpen for the Brewers, I mean, Hader and Knable, man, they are – the stuff that the Hader was doing today, I don't know if anyone's going to get a bat on the ball against that guy because of the funky delivery plus the stuff.
Yeah, and today he gave up a blue base hit to Ian Happ. It was just the 12th hit that he's allowed this season. He's really been incredible. And even in the ball game on Monday when he gave up the base hit to tie the game, Jason Hayward, you know, there was a situation before that where he should have had an out. There might not have been a guy on base to begin with, but regardless, Hader has been really special. A lot of people in the organization and fan base, they kind of want to turn him into a starter, and I think he's better utilized in this role. The Andrew Miller, put him in the most difficult of situations to get you out, and everything lined up for him perfectly today in the eighth inning. Again, you mentioned Hader and Knable, but I think Jeremy Jeffress, who leads the major leagues for all relievers in earned run average, may be having the best season of any of them. He's kind of the starter's closer. He can close games. He can come in a pinch in the fourth or in the fifth or in the seventh, whatever it is, and he's really thrived. I think JJ has been the linchpin of that bullpen so far this year.
I know that you are in touch with fans. I know that they talk with you on Twitter or in the ballpark or when you're out trying to have dinner with your family. How do they feel about where the Brewers are in comparison to the Cubs and the Cardinals?
I think there's a lot of excitement around the Brewers, and it kind of started brewing more often, pardon the pun, in the offseason when they went out and they got Christian Yelich and they went out and acquired Lorenzo Cain. I think those were the two big moves where the fan base finally went, okay, now last year it was a good year, you know, 86 wins, you're sitting pretty, and then you make a couple of moves. You help the offense. The bullpen is much better this year with guys that are healthy and coming into their own a little bit as professional baseball players and as big leaguers. So I think you felt pretty good about that situation. It's different in other years where, well, the Brewers could be good if this happens, or they'll be good if that happens. There weren't a lot of they'll be good if questions in the offseason. It was, I think this team's going to be pretty solid no matter what, and that's proved to be true. 41 wins already.
You mind if I ask you a couple broadcasting questions?
Absolutely.
What is the difference between a Jeff Levering call of basketball versus a call of baseball?
Well, the Jeff Levering call for basketball is going to be different because I'm not working for a team. I have no rooting interest, whether it's Marquette or a lot of DePaul games, or if I'm doing Villanova, I really don't have a rooting interest, and I'm paid by the network. So I can play it as down the middle and as conference specific as I can. In baseball, I'm going to call the game the way it should be called, but I will definitely favor the home team because that's who I'm employed by. I'm employed by the Brewers. So in a baseball broadcast, I'll call it with a, you know, like a 70-30 slant pro Brewers, of course, because that's who I know where my bread is buttered at the end of the day. And, you know, it'd be different if I was doing a national broadcast. I'd have to play it more down the middle, and I could get a little bit more excited for both teams because that's how it is. And for basketball games, whether it's a Big East or Big Ten game, it's always going to slant towards the home network and in the home conference. So that's kind of how the different styles of how I call games, whether it's baseball or in the off season, in the off baseball season, doing college hoops.
Is it hard to flip the switch between kind of a frenetic pace of a basketball game to the marathon that is a baseball season?
For me, not really, Lawrence, to be honest with you, because I grew up doing baseball. I didn't really know any different. You know, I came through the minor leagues. I did 8 years in the minor leagues. I was by myself for six of those 8 years doing every single inning of every single game. So I didn't know any different. So basketball for me, it's not a harder adjustment. The tempo is what it is, and it's a different medium calling TV against the radio broadcast anyway, so I can involve my color analyst a lot more and more of a conversational-based broadcast on a college basketball game. Whereas on baseball, you're telling stories, you're killing time, you've got more of a lean-back approach to it. I like to make the analogy where if you're listening to a baseball game on the radio, you've got your iced tea or whatever in your hand, and you're leaning back and you're enjoying the day. When you're watching TV doing basketball or football, your elbows are kind of up on the table in anticipation. So there's a little more relaxation when calling a baseball game as opposed to watching the pace of a football or a basketball game.
How do you take things from legends like Bob Uecker and not mimic those things?
Because I'm not Bob Uecker. You know, no one is. No one will ever be that way. And, you know, I grew up watching Major League just like you did, like everybody else did, and you know the lines, but you can't use the lines on the guy, you know? It just doesn't work like that. And, you know, the first thing I ever learned when I started working with Bob was I need to make sure that I do everything to make sure Bob sounds as good as possible. Nobody cares and nobody tunes in to listen to me. They tune in to listen to Bob. So they want to get as many great stories and as many great narratives as they can from him and from his experience. And my job is to make sure that he tells those stories and that they're appropriate for the moment. So that's what I take from Bob more than anything else. The game is first and foremost. If it gets sideways, then you can get a little bit silly and get, you know, a little off the rails a little for the entertainment value. But the game is first and foremost, and nobody has seen more games and called more games of our era than Bob at the moment.
Was there a moment when you were in the minor leagues where you were like, man, it's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. If there was, what kept you going?
You know, I don't know if there was ever that moment. I spent 3 years in A-ball and essentially got fired from my first job because there was an ownership change, and the guy that took my job left AA to go back to A-ball in the California League. And I was very fortunate to interview for that job, and we basically traded places. It was a good story, and I was able to move in advance. And, you know, I had never called baseball when I got into it. I had had a couple of fill-in appearances in 2006, which was the first time I'd ever called baseball because I always played in college. So I had to learn the tempo. I had to learn the pace and all that. So I was kind of flying by the seat of my pants doing all of this. And I never really had that moment of, well, if I don't move up in this amount of time, I'm going to lose hope and I don't think it's going to happen. I never felt that. But when I was essentially let go in A-ball, I kind of went, well, if I don't get a job in AA or in AAA, then I think, you know, this might be my last little swan song and I'm going to go back onto the production side of things. But I ended up getting that AA job and was in Springfield, Missouri for 3 years with the Cardinals. And then from there went to AAA and the Red Sox organization in Pawtucket. And 2 years after that, I'm in the big leagues calling games with Bob Uecker. So, I mean, 8 years in the minor leagues is not a lot of time in the grand scheme of things. There are a lot of people that have spent more time in the minor leagues than 8 years. I've been very fortunate to be right place, right time, right people. And, it's all about perseverance, and I'm always trying to learn. I this is not a finished product by any stretch. I continue to learn it each and every day and never take anything for granted.
What's the best moment you've had in that booth?
Oh, man, there's too many. I mean, my favorite part of every day is just having dinner with Bob and having him tell stories. Over the last 3 days, Pete Vukovich has been in the booth, so we've been sharing Harry Doyle and Clue Haywood stories. And the real-life stories are even better than the movie stories. So, I mean, the last 3 days, I've been in stitches, which has been unbelievable. But maybe my favorite moment of calling a game for the Brewers would have been the Travis Shaw walk-off last year in September against Wade Davis. So that was probably because I got to call it. It was a fun call. It was a great moment. The Brewers were in a battle for the postseason. It's probably my favorite game that we've had in the booth.
All right, I'm going to turn you back into a basketball announcer for a second. I think Mikal Bridges is a decent draft pick for the Bulls where they're picking. What do you think?
I think Mikal Bridges is going to be a solid player. I mean, he's so lengthy. He can play great offense. He'll play great defense. He comes from that Jay Wright system with Villanova. I think somebody would be silly not to take anybody from Villanova. Those players just have a great feel for the game of basketball, and it's just the program part of it. It's almost like being Tom Brady's backup, right? I mean, you can't really go wrong. Well, you can if you're Hoyer, but other than that, you know, I just think that those three guys that are coming out, DiVincenzo and Brunson and Bridges, they're all going to be really good NBA players.
Well, Jeff, man, every time I see you, you always have a smile on your face, and I love the work that you're doing both on the basketball front and the baseball front. Thanks so much for coming on the show, man. It's extremely informative, and I hope that we can talk later on in the year when the money's on the table between the Cubs and the Brewers.
You got it, pal. Anytime, and I appreciate you reaching out, and I'm happy to do it anytime you need it.
It's Jeff Levering, who does Milwaukee's play-by-play. He's a really good dude, and I love his call. He's a good man. We back after this on The Score. A couple of notes for you, the White Sox fan. A couple things to be looking for. Tonight on NBC Sports Chicago, Sierra Santos had a sit-down with Reynaldo Lopez. And they sat down and ate at 90 Miles Cuban Cafe and talked about stuff. Sierra does really good features, so I'm kind of looking forward to seeing this. So it'll be on NBC Sports Chicago tonight if you want to check it out. White Sox All Access. The other thing, I'd like to give a little shout to the White Sox. They'd had their service week this week, and all teams are doing really good stuff. The Cubs have done incredible stuff, too. The White Sox were at La Rabida a couple of days ago, and Benetti was there, and then they were with the kids, and that's near and dear to me as a kid. I spent a little time at La Rabida when I was trying to figure out whether or not I had Crohn's, so they took good care of me over there, and it's a tremendous hospital, and I give a lot of props to the White Sox because they walk it like they talk it, and guys are out there doing work. They had the young lady, Holly Dawson, I think her name is, who has the 3D printed hand, and she's throwing out first pitches like all across the country.
Haley.
Let's get it right. Haley Dawson. So that was a cool moment last night. So a couple different things for them. And Herbie, I just got Herbie a shirt. White Sox sent it over, I guess, is it tomorrow's game? Tomorrow's game, they're going to give away blackout shirts. So if you were thinking about, hey, a day game, I want to go check out a day game over at White Sox, they're giving away blackout t-shirts from the blackout game. So, and fisherman hats, EPMD style, on Saturday. I believe I will be in the house for Saturday's game. I got to check my tickets. Come to Swaparama for bargains, food, and fun. Three great locations, Melrose Park, Alsip, and 42nd and Ashland in Chicago. Visit Swaparama's website for market info and find out how to become a Swaparama vendor. Go to swaparama-o-rama.com. Swaparama, the first name in flea markets. When we come back, we're going to talk with Casey Johnson. Wrote a great piece about the Bulls and the history of the Bulls after the championships. We'll do that next here on The Score. Don't miss it.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.